if oil prices stay at their current levels, the Defense Department stands to save about $2 billion this year. Defense News reports the Pentagon's already saved about $500 million. Sharon Burke is senior advisor at the New America Foundation, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Operational Energy Plans and Programs, and looking at how today's oil prices will affect future defense policy. Sharon, it's great to have you back on the program. I read today on CNBC.com that one of the officials in the Middle East believes the days of $100 a barrel oil are over, at least for the foreseeable future. So what's the implication for planning and strategy, especially vis-a-vis alternative fuels, when oil now is cheap and we expect to stay cheap for such a long time?
Well, first, you got to say that any prediction about the price of oil is just destined to be wrong. Almost no one is right about where prices are going to go. So I would take that with, you know, a grain of sand.
Okay.
But certainly, it does become a challenge for alternative energy, alternative fuels, and that's always been the case. Is that you've got a difficult market to compete in. And a lot of the reasons that you want to have alternatives come in for security, for environmental reasons, they're externalities that are really hard to price. So this has always been the problem, is the volatility of the oil market makes it very difficult for alternatives to compete, and that continues to be the case.
Does it become a matter of just deciding the policy of the United States or the policy of the Defense Department is going to be, we want to, for those other reasons that you just touched on, we decide that we no longer want to be dependent on fossil fuel, and regardless of what the price is going to be, we're going to pursue as cost-efficient an alternative fuel development strategy as possible? Is that really what it boils down to, Sharon?
It really does. It would be ideal if the country could make a sustained commitment to an alternative. But the reality is that we get a new Congress, we get a new president, and they come in with a different idea about how to promote energy security. And so we wheel around from one solution to the next. It's, you know, hydrogen under the Bush administration. It's renewable fuels under this one. They're all good ideas and good solutions. But if you're changing your investment strategy every 2 to 4 or even 8 years, it's not long enough to really bring alternatives into play.
Mike McCord, the comptroller at the Pentagon, told Defense News that he expects the savings to be about $500 million at the most, and maybe as much as $2 billion for the rest of the fiscal year. Those numbers sound like a lot of money. In the grand scheme of the Pentagon budget, they're not a lot, and I wonder if they're enough to drive any kind of strategy or policy changes or decisions at all, or if you just say, well, I'm happy that we have the extra money and we'll put it someplace else that we have the legislative latitude to be able to do it and kind of get on with your life.
No, you're exactly right, Francis. $2 billion is a lot of money in the real world, but when the budget for the Department of Defense is somewhere between $500 and $700 billion, it's not enough to make a giant difference to how the Department of Defense operates. Now, having said that, the way they buy fuel is they have a standard price for fuel, and they have to set the price. That means all defense customers and all major federal customers pay the same price for fuel, no matter what the actual cost is, where they may be. So they have to set that price 18 months in advance. So that's why you see all of a sudden a windfall. And in some years, of course, it goes the other way, and you have a shortage, and then that becomes a problem as well. So the best thing they could do in a lot of ways would be to leave the money in the working capital fund where they use to set the standard price, so that if the price goes back the other way, they're not suddenly scrambling for additional appropriations.
If I were in the defense budget shop, though, my fear then would be that Congress would say, well, you didn't spend it, so we'll take it away. That'd be a great place for us to cut next year.
Now, that has happened in the past when we had some new members and some new staffers, I think in 2011. They looked at this working capital fund and they said, oh, good God, it's a slush fund. We should take it. The problem is that money is actually there to make sure that military customers, particularly those that are in combat operations, can buy fuel and don't have to suddenly scramble for the dough. So when they took it away, the fund went into a crisis pretty soon thereafter and didn't have enough money to buy fuel. And you just don't want that to happen to combatants.
No, you really don't want them to have to say we're out of gas.
Exactly.
Sharon Burks, a senior advisor at the New America Foundation, former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Operational Energy. So if we've established that $2 billion in fuel savings within one fiscal year is not a significant strategy driver, what's the implication, as I mentioned, if $50, $60, $70 oil is the rate that we're paying for the foreseeable future, if really for the next half decade or so, that's where we are? I understand your comment, and I take your comment to heart, that making those kinds of predictions is a tricky business. But when we consider what is happening in the United States with the fracking boom and the fact that we're poised to become in the next half decade to decade a net exporter rather than importer of energy, considering that the supply is all of a sudden spiked and the demand is not moving in parallel with that, it's not out of the realm of possibility to think that we could stay in the $50 to $75 window for the foreseeable future. At what point does it become wise to think about changing strategy or policy based on reduced energy prices?
Well, I think that there are two drivers here that are independent of price. Now, remember that the Department of Defense is a global buyer, so it's not just how much fuel is there available in the United States. The Department of Defense is buying fuel where their forces are and where they operate. You want to have the fuel because fuel is heavy and takes up a lot of room. You want to buy it as close as you can to where you operate. So, you know, whatever's happening with supply in the United States, the Department's also going to be concerned about what's happening with supply in the Far East and what's happening with supply in the Middle East, because that's where they are and where they're going to be buying it. So they need it to be available there. So that's one thing that becomes independent of what the price is they need it where they need it, when they need it. And then secondly, at $50 to $75 a barrel, you know, that's great for everybody on some level because it's money that you can put somewhere else. And that's certainly true for the Department of Defense. They can figure out good things to do with $2 billion. And they can figure out bad things too, but they can figure out good things that'll help warfighters with $2 billion. However, one of the things that happens when you get to $50 a barrel is that there are a lot of countries in the world that become destabilized by that, such as Venezuela, Nigeria, Iran, Iraq. There are lots of producers in this category who that's not enough money for them at this point, and it's going to cause problems. So it has another unintended effect for a defense interest, which is now you've got more defense problems in the world.
Well, and if we take your comment to heart about wanting to buy the oil where the consumer will be, let's think about Japan or the Pacific Rim and our operations there, South Korea, other parts of the world like that. The biggest oil supplier there is going to be, I imagine, Russia. And I read recently that Vladimir Putin's economy and his national budget is based on an oil price of about $70 a barrel for that government to stay stable. And so I imagine when we have a customer, I mean, his biggest customer for oil right now is China, not friendly to us, and they have enough money to want to try to poke us in the eye if they get a chance. So this becomes a national security issue as well as an economic and policy issue, I guess.
I agree with you. So on the one hand, as a consumer, the lower price and the greater availability domestically, it matters for the Department of Defense. They're a big consumer. Money in the bank's always good. But on the other hand, this isn't a consumer like anyone else. And so they're going to be very concerned about those kinds of geopolitical and global availability issues. And when you get right down to it, you know, maybe now all of a sudden with gasoline being cheaper, a lot of Americans are buying bigger cars because they're not as worried about how much it's going to cost them. But for the Department of Defense, having to move fuel on a battlefield is always going to be a military issue and a military liability potentially because you got a big supply line that people can target. So it doesn't really matter if it's really cheap or really expensive if you have to move a really big supply line on a battlefield.
Bottom line then, Sharon, is what it sounds like I hear you saying in summary is this is not nearly as simple as oil was this price and now it's this price. Yay, we get to celebrate this wonderful savings. This is very nuanced and a lot more complicated than that.
I think energy security in defense terms just means more than just the price. That's all. You know, the price, again, as a big consumer, a lower price is always going to be welcome. But the security externalities of petroleum and of petroleum consumption are going to be a bigger concern.